Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
What's poppin'? Welcome to another edition of Advantage Connors, here with my mascot, Gold Dude Isabella on my side, and my co-host, Jimmy Connors. What's going on today?
I don't know. I thought you were going to say I was your mascot. you got your little girl with you over there, and it was her birthday and a couple of weeks ago, and she turned...
Four. Already.
That's right. And I'll never forget her birthday because it's on my birthday too. So we had a good celebration, and now, you know, hey, you know, we're back into it and a lot of things happening around the world. And you sent me some news this morning in tennis. What's up?
Yeah. Some breaking news. I was at work, early this morning, doing some Davis Cup action, and, the news came down on his Twitter that Roger Federer, 20-time Grand Slam champion Roger Federer, has announced his retirement from the ATP Tour and Grand Slam match play. So what do you think about that? What's your first response?
Yeah, my first thoughts were, I mean, you know, he's been injured the last couple of years. He's had a knee problem, well documented. And obviously, you know, taking this time away and, you know, trying to take care of it and get it back into shape and, you know, to go out and you know, and put that kind of pressure, you know, on your body playing, you know, 3 and 4, 5 hour matches and 3 out of 5 sets and things like that. I mean, it's no easy task coming back from an injury. And I talk from experience. It's, there a lot of work goes into it and you gotta be lucky. And, you know, for him not to be able to come back with everything that he's gone through to try to, you know, get well and be able to come back and compete at such a high level. Obviously, he's hurting, you know, even though, you know, I think he'll still continue to play a little bit. He just won't, you know, get in the flow of the major events and so forth. But, hey, playing in pain is no fun. But, you know, I kind of feel for him that, you know, he was actually, you know, his injury told him that he had to retire. He never had an opportunity to come back and really try it and give it a go. Which is sometimes, you know, tough to take, but hey, you know, he's got a long life and better to be as healthy as you can be and not push it too far.
Yeah. The 3 knee surgeries in like a 2-year period, that's tough, especially when you're a little older, you know, it takes longer to recuperate and to come back and you're giving up that time to the other players who are out there playing. And crazy career, like just looking at the stats, obviously the 20 Grand Slams, he comes up short on a few records that, you know, someone I know happens to own. 103 ATP titles, 157 ATP finals, and 1,251 matches won. Comes up just a little short of you on all 3. Talk to me about the ridiculousness of those numbers.
Well, when you hear numbers like that, Brett, I guess, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind is, you know, every time you show up to play, and you're ready to play, and that's why, you know, an injury that, you know, that comes later on is tough to overcome, you know, that because he's used to that. He's used to going into whether it's the Wimbledon, U.S. Open, Australia, Cincinnati, you know, Basel, wherever, and saying, you know, I'm going to win this tournament.
Yeah.
And you perform like that and you expect yourself to give it that kind of effort every time. And that's why you accumulate numbers like that. You know, that, you know, back in the day, my day, you know, as you know, I know they've changed now that, you know, Grand Slams have become so important and, you know, Grand Slam matches and so forth. But, you know, back in the day, every match was important, you know, as far as selling the game and for your legacy and to be able to, you know, not only be able to play the tournaments, but, you know, get lucky and maybe play some exhibitions or special events. All that did was build your name and your reputation and, you know, and how you perform, you know, kind of carried over to everything else in a way to make a living, you know, and, it, you know, but you don't put numbers up like that by accident. You know, you put those numbers up by going out every time. And like I said, being ready and knowing that you've got the bullseye on your back, that everybody wants to beat you no matter what.
Right.
And you perform and keep pushing them back. Now, I think that's one reason he was able to play at such a high level, you know, for so long. Also, it is because that was that important to him, just like it was that important to me. To be able and to, you know, eventually you don't go out and please anybody else except yourself and how you perform. And, you know, he pushed himself to that level, you know, from day one throughout the course of his career, and his numbers show it.
Yeah, unbelievable stats. But to me, I've always said the craziest thing about Fed's career, never once retired from a match.
And yeah, that's incredible.
That's half incredible, half lucky, because you know how it is. Like sometimes you just tweak an ankle or you fall or something happens to your knee, goes out or something, and you know, you got to retire. But you know,
I was also going to throw that in there, but it could be half crazy too, is because there might have been times, you know, when he did tweak his knee, you mm-hmm. know, or he did, you know, tweak something and he kept on playing.
Yeah.
And instead of, you know, saying, man, this isn't good. Maybe I should, you know, think about this. He continued to put that pressure on himself physically, mm-hmm. You know, and then that also, if you're protecting something somewhere along the line, then that affects you mentally too. That's an extra strain on you.
Right.
You know, you know, that is an unbelievable stat. I don't think I know anybody else, you know, in the game, you know, especially when I was playing, that ever did that.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, and there we go again. You know, let's go back to his numbers. You know, how many matches he won, how many finals was he in, how many tournaments he won, you know, and all that. You know, that's all part of pushing yourself, just that little extra, you know, every time.
Right.
And eventually, you know, the older you get, it catches up with you.
Yeah.
It caught up with him too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, age gets us all, but I mean, never once pulling the ripcord is pretty impressive, especially when you think like back to his last match. So like his last competitive match now, besides Laver Cup, he's going to play Laver Cup in London next week. So that'll be kind of the chance for the tennis world to say goodbye and to see him play. And I'm sure he'll play doubles and singles and kind of lead the way there with an unbelievable lineup with Djokovic and Murray and Nadal there also. But like his last competitive match, he lost to Hurkacz at Wimbledon in straights. And the last set was a 6-love set. I think a good percentage of the tour, I don't think he was all the way right in that last set. Hurkacz played really good, but I don't think Fed was right that day. I think there's a good percentage of the tour that pulls the ripcord in that situation. Doesn't go down and let themselves take a 6-love set. Retires in the second or retires after they get broken immediately in the third at 1-love. Something like that, right? Instead, he takes his medicine. He doesn't pull away from Hurkacz's moment. So Hurkacz, you know, wins and is respectful and then goes inside. He doesn't have to answer questions like, well, you know, Fed was hurt and, you know, is that the only reason you won? And, you know, all that kind of stuff. He never takes away from his opponent. And I always think that's like so cool and so impressive as like a person and then as an athlete, because like you're always cognizant of like, you know, the other player and the game itself and the respect of the game. And like you got, you know, people like you and him are like such great ambassadors for the game and have helped grow the game so much. And it's just like, you know, it's like a sad day in a lot of ways for the game and for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, we've talked about this ever since we started our podcast, that, you know, eventually, you know, the main three that are playing right now, which is Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic, eventually they're going to go.
Right.
You know, it's inevitable. It's something is you're either going to get older, you're going to get hurt, you know, maybe both, you mm-hmm. know, as what's happened to Federer right now, that who's next? Rafa, you know, I mean, you know, he's been had his ups and downs with injuries, you know, for and well documented for a number of years, mm-hmm. And you know, even pulled out of the semifinal of Wimbledon,
right?
You know, with an injury. So, you know, what's next? It's Federer now, Nadal next. They're not letting Djokovic play, you know. So, you know, we've been asking for a next generation. All of a sudden, they're going to be thrown in there, you know, mm-hmm. head first, you know, to take over, you know, which I don't know. Maybe that's the best. Maybe, you know, they've had enough time to play off of the three.
Yeah.
And I don't think Novak or Rafa's finished anyway. I think they've got a lot more tennis in them. But maybe this is the right thing for, you know, for the young guys to have to step up now. And now it's time for them to take their place.
Right.
And let them prove it, you know, like this past U.S. Open,
right.
You know, having Alcaraz win that. I mean, he went out and took it. Nobody gave him anything.
Right.
And that's why, you know, it's so impressive for him to win there.
Right. I mean, I think we can still throw Murray in there. He's still out there battling. But like, yeah, it's not the same Murray as we were used to. And yeah, it is funny that like Fed's done, Murray still plays, you know, and is going about it, but we know he's probably not a major contender like he used to be. And Joker isn't allowed to play in half the events or whatever, a good number of the events. And then Nadal like has had injuries, but is still playing. So in a way, like in the beginning, when they were all coming up, Nadal was the guy you thought probably would burn out earliest. Like, I think it was similar to you. Like, I feel like you probably heard these things earlier in your career, like, cause you played so hard on every point, you know, you battled so hard on the hard courts and it was too tough on your knees and you're going to like wear out once you're 30. And everyone thought that about Nadal, and Nadal's still mm-hmm. out there grinding, winning, you know, two slams this year, you know, like still going out there, putting up numbers, and like right. somehow he might be the last man standing out of these guys.
You're right. It could be, you know, but it's interesting, better when you, you know, when you're like that and you play like that and you put so much into it, like he has throughout the course of his career. I mean, I look back in my career, I never wanted a massage. I never wanted anything because I didn't want that to take away from the real feeling of my body. Hmm. You know, if I had some aches and pains, it was almost, you know, okay, I've got aches and pains. I'm good with that. You know, what hurts? That's okay. I'm going to leave it alone because I know it hurts. I didn't want to ever try to, you know, mask the feeling of, you know, what I was out there doing and trying to play for, you know, playing a 5-hour match. I knew that there was aches and pains there, mm-hmm. you know, but I didn't want him to leave. I liked being aware of that and feeling that. But, you know, when you put that kind of effort in it, you know, and Federer put that kind of effort in too. Only it didn't look like that. He wasn't the grinding grinder, you know, nose in the dirt, you know, Connors, you know, Nadal kind of way to play. You know, he was more gliding. It was more Nastasi like mm-hmm. The way he played, and you know, with his movement and his, you know, his elegance and so forth like that. So, you know, even though he was putting out the effort, maybe it didn't take its toll until, you know, later. You mm-hmm. know, Rafa's had his ups and downs earlier than Federer. So, but it's, you know,
You're right. Yeah, you're right. Like, I've been lucky enough to do some photography, you know, tennis photography at some of the places I work, or just going down to Indian Wells. And one thing I've noticed when I watch Fed matches is like, I would just sit there and, you know, I'd be like looking at my camera, looking at the pictures I took with my head down, and just listening. And like I would compare the sound of Fed's footwork compared to like Chilich or whoever he would play, whoever the Dolgopolov or whatever the player was at the time. And, mm-hmm. and you're right. He's like a glider. His footwork was almost like silent compared to mm-hmm. like the lumbery steps of like a big 6 foot six guy or what, you know, even like other players like Nadal's footwork probably sounds heavier than Fed's, you know, or even when Roddick would play him and we would be at his matches, you know, just right. like just the style of the way people move and the way his footwork to get around the ball and to, you know, get to the forehand and hit his huge forehand and, you know, such a good backhand. And I think Fed's got one of the best serves ever. You know, he doesn't serve the fastest, but like situational over his career, I think his serve has got to be like top 5 or 10 just because he's right. so money with it, you know?
Right. Well, he had variety of pace and direction, mm-hmm. such variety, you know, that, you know, and one thing that I always noticed, you know, or what was important to me as a returner was to watch the toss of the ball, you know, and my most difficult guys I had to return against were the guys who threw it in the same place all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know, no matter what, whether they were, you know, put it up the line, put it out wide, spin it in, you know, slide it, whatever. And it seemed, and he had almost a kind of a quick motion, his arm and hand and racket went all up at the same time. So he was, you know, a bit of a different kind of toss, which, you know, obviously suited him very well, but his direction and variety of pace was pretty strong with that.
Yeah. I mean, his serve is pretty fluid. It's just like that. It's such a sweet motion from down to up and snap, you know, and he jumps into the court. His serve, people always talk, well, biggest serve. It's like a big serve. If you know where it's going, it can be blocked back. You know what I mean? You can like block it back deep and kind of neutralize the serve in a sense. But like, if you have one where you have no idea where it's going, and like you said, like he puts the toss in a pretty similar place on most of his serves. So that makes it super hard to read. And then like, you know, I'd rather have that than 140 mile an hour bomb where you know where it's going.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that you can get onto, you know, if you know it's coming in at 140 all the time, all you got to do is hold on for dear life and, you know, and try to, you know,
redirect it.
Just hold. Yeah. Just hold firm. And, you know, once you start the ball in play, then, you know, then you're back in it. You know, but when you're guessing all the time and trying to figure out, you know, at 30-15, I mean, I was never a big stat guy, but, you know, I always, you know, kind of figured, you know, you're going to go with what you know best, you know, under the pressure and things like that. But, you know, he wasn't like that. You know, he could vary it. And he was never, you know, I liked guys who went in there and always give you something that you never expect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's, you know, you're down break point and you're going to serve up the line every time. I like a guy who's going to serve you out wide, you know, and come in as opposed to, you know, the same old by the book. Well, the stats says, well, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if you're going to go by stats, you know what I always said about that,
yeah.
You know, you're going to be sitting on the sidelines a lot.
Right.
You know, so, but yeah, the game is going to miss him, you know, and what he's done for, you know, the past 20 years or maybe even more, a few more years than that. But yeah, he's had a hell of a record and you know, should be more than proud of, you know, of his results, you know, every time he walked out there. And like you said, you know, he never walked off, never defaulted a match and pretty good numbers. Pretty good.
One more thing that you can compare to like your career. If Fed isn't Fed, if there's no Fed, does Djokovic have 20 plus slams and Nadal have 20 plus slams and like guys like Murray have 8 slams? Or does a guy like Fed being such a once in a generational, or you know what I mean, kind of guy who comes along, does he pull the people behind him to get better? You know, does he make Nadal become better? And Djokovic then sees both those guys ahead of him and he's like, well, you know, screw this. I got to compete with these guys. I got to get better. Like did McEnroe coming along and Borg and Lindell coming along make you end up with 109 instead of 89?
Yeah, I that's a very good point, Brett. And they had somebody to, you know, to look up to and to go up against, mm-hmm. You know, when Federer, because he had come in and he was, you know, the first one to kind of take away from Sampras and that group, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when the Nadals and the Djokovic's came in, you know, they already had somebody who was, you know, was established and, you know, says, okay, you know, if I'm going to compete, this is the guy, this right. is the guy I'm going to have to beat. And, you know, when it was me, I was the older one, I was the one that had been around and been the best in the U.S. and the best in the world and the Wimbledon winner and U.S. Open winner. So when the younger guys came in, you know, from my standpoint, you know, I didn't want them to catch me. I tried to, and they pushed me. There's no doubt, but I didn't want them to catch me. I didn't want them to take over my spot. You know, the Nadals and that, they were looking at Federer. I think the same way, but you have to have somebody or something in your day that pushes you a little bit harder than you ever want to play or ever want to train. You know what that is? Everybody's different. Everybody's an individual on that. But you got to have something, you know, to grab onto that when you get up, because sometimes you don't want to do it. You don't want to go out there and grind it and, you know, and put in the time. You know, it's a, you know, tennis, I've always said, is a 365 day a year job if you do it right. And you want to be the best and you want to put up the numbers like Federer did and the amount of tournaments and the matches and the blah, 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 and all that.
Yeah.
It's a round the clock business.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes you don't want to do it, but, you know, you got to find something that pushes yourself a little further and a little harder. And if you find that, then you're pretty lucky.
Yeah. It's funny. It's like, it's almost like discipline fuel or something, you know, like as you get older and get better and have to, you know, like you need new things to be the thing that motivates you. Sometimes it's anger or it's resentment or mm-hmm. it's being belittled or shunned or sometimes mm-hmm. it's just trying to beat your rival or who the next guy is or the guy coming up behind you is. And it's always changing, you know? And then at the heart of it is like your discipline, you know? Sometimes you need different things to help fuel that discipline.
That's the right word. That's I've lived by that word. And if you have that and you can find a little extra motivation, you know, to push that discipline, then, you know, for me, that was the key. You know, what was that? I mean, you know, you mentioned them all. Is it anger? Is it resentment? Is it shun? Is it, you know, you're finished? You know, go do something else. You're getting too old. You put on a few pounds. You've done, you know, there's so many things that can be said, you know, to try to take away your love for what you do. Because everybody's looking for an angle, you know, especially the press. I mean, they'd rather, you know, when you're on top, nobody wants to tear you down quicker than the press, you know, but they also, when you're down, they're the ones that want to try to build you back up again, you know, make up your mind. So, I mean, it's a very fine line, but discipline is, you know, to me, you know, the most important. And, you know, as long as I kept that, then I was able to play at a pretty high level.
Yep. That's good stuff. So farewell to Fed. We'll get to see him play Laver Cup, and I'm sure we'll still see him around tennis, you know, a lot. And he'll be an ambassador for the game and play exhibitions and make tons of bread and all that stuff. So, farewell to Fed. And, let's move on. You mentioned it earlier. How lucky is tennis that like Fed and these guys have like hung on for as long as they have, and no one's kind of come in to take the throne from behind them for almost like a generation and a half, you know, creeping on two kind of.
Right.
And then right, like literally 2 weeks before Fed wins, this, you know, phenom kid who's been, you know, come out of nowhere. We've known about him for a year and a half or so, but this year is he's really come on, you know, breaking on the scene winning Miami and when, you know, getting, you know, far in Roland Garros and winning a bunch of tournaments on clay. And Carlos Alcaraz ends up winning the 2022 US Open over Casper Ruud, your guy, in four sets to take the crown. He had to earn it. He had 3-5 setters, I think, in a row. He beat Chilich. He beat our guy Sinner in a thrilling match, adding to the idea that could be the next great rivalry in tennis. I'm kind of pushing that as a narrative just because they're so close in age and I love watching them play. And then Francis Tiafoe, the American making the semifinals, his best result as a pro, losing in five sets, 6-3 in the fifth against Carlos. And then Ruud goes down in four. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, good. You know, for me, that's good action, you know, and the reason being is because, yeah, if you look at those guys, they're all new players. You know, even going back to Zverev and Tsitsipas and Team, you know, who are just maybe a few years older than, you know, than those guys, five or six years older, but, you know, half a generation, let's say, that you know, that we're not even there. We're non-existent. Mm-hmm. You know, so the new, young, fresh names are out there ready to take over. I mean, you have been touting center for a long time, root for a long time, to come up and start taking their place. But Alcaraz, you know, his performance the last year and a half is, you know, for a young kid, you know, he's 18, 19 years old, you know, to, you know, he's got no fear, you know, and he's got no fear to take over. That's what I liked about him. And here's another thing I liked about him. That man came out, he's 19 years old.
He's a man, though. Still,
and he's a man, that's right. But he came out, he didn't care if it took him 4 hours, 5 hours, three sets, five sets. He says, let's get down to business.
Yeah.
And nobody gave him anything in that tournament. He earned it all the way, you know, winning those five sets. You know, listen, you know what? Winning a five setter and then having to go play a match the next day and getting through it in three sets, that's not easy, let alone playing three five setters in a row, to be in that kind of shape. But you know what, I keep saying it every time, Brett, that's what they get paid the big bucks for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're not willing to be that, and there's that word discipline again, I'm gonna say it again, he's got that discipline, you know, that says I'll do whatever it takes to go out there and to be able to be at my best or the best I can be at that time, every time. And, you know, my hope is that those who made a big impact on the US Open are not satisfied with that. That they say, look what I did there. Look how well I played there. I can do this better. I can do that better. I can get in better shape. I can work on this. I can work on that. And they continue to climb to be better and better every time. And I hope they don't sit back and, you know, kind of rest on their laurels, you know, but, you know, to go out and to continue to build on this, you know, Alcaraz, now he goes, he wins the US Open. Now does he go over to Australia and win Australia, you know, right, or make an impact in Australia also? You know, Tiafo, you know, he's a semifinals at the US Open, a lot of hoopla around that. You know, is he satisfied with that? Or is he going to go to Australia and say, I did it in New York, I can do it in Melbourne? You know, that's kind of, you know, what we've been talking about, Fed. That's what he did. Yeah. That's what Nadal does. That's what Djokovic does. You know, and if this is the new generation, these guys that are going to take over, that's what they're going to have to do. And it's going to be interesting to see who's the next guy to win 10 or 12 Grand Slams. Who's that going to be?
Right.
Yeah. That to me is going to be important, because, you know, if all of a sudden you think, well, you know, I won the US Open, you know, I'll live off that for 5 years.
Yeah.
I don't think he'll be like that. I think he's got that, you know, that intensity and that grind and that, you know, whatever it takes to try to be the best. And obviously he's got a good team around him. You know, they must look after him pretty darn good as far as, you know, being able to go and, you know, have a couple of weeks like he did in New York. I was happy that he won, to be honest with you.
Yeah, me too.
He had some good matches, and, you know, I mean, the effort that he put out was pretty spectacular. I was happy to see him win.
Yeah, I got a few things. I think you're right. I don't think Ruud will like rest on it, because he made the finals at the French, and boom, like two slams later, he's in another slam final. You know, so he didn't like worry about that. And, oh, that clay is my favorite surface, I'll just wait for French every year. But, you know, he's on the hard court. He's getting better on hard court.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his serve was pretty strong. It's not like that big, but it's big for him. And he's hitting the spots. It's tough. Francis, you said in Australia, he's had success there before making the quarter. But then after he had that success, he kind of disappeared a little bit in the slam. So I think he's one to look for. Kyrgios made the quarters and kind of was, you know, set up to us thinking this is the best chance he's ever had to win a slam. You know, he had catching off in a quarter to probably play, it would have been Ruud, and then to play Alcaraz, which, you know, Alcaraz maybe gets him, but he's in a final with, like, you know, a coin flip maybe. And he loses in five to catching off. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, but you know, he said beforehand that he's looking forward to going home. You know, so you know, if you're going to go into a Grand Slam having that feeling, then every time you go out there and it gets tight, you're kind of you know, having an internal battle with yourself, saying, do I want to go or do I want to stay? Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of thing. You know, if you're going to play those tournaments like that, you expect to win a 2-week tournament, 3 out of 5 sets. You know, with all the other excess pressures and all that goes along with, you know, those Grand Slam tournaments. Yeah, if you're going to go in there with an attitude like, I don't really know if I want to be here, I can't wait to get home, then, you know, I don't know. I know this for a fact, Brett. I wouldn't have a chance to win the tournament if I felt like that.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be in two minds. I'd say, well, it's 3-all in the fifth. I've gotten this far. Do I want to win or do I want to catch the flight out at 9 o'clock?
Right.
Bad, you know, that's bad vibes.
Definitely.
You know, from my standpoint. But hey, you know, just think what would have happened with his career. He got to the finals of Wimbledon. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And if he would have, you know, gotten through and, you know, gotten to the finals of the US Open and or won it, you know, what do you think that would have done for him?
Right.
For his career and for the way people looked at him and you know, and then all of a sudden now he's a major player, you know, as you know, in the game. Well, every time is he going to show up every time and be in the finals or semifinals? And
right. And then he's going into Australia's, you know, his home country. Slam.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, but
I thought that was a little, I thought that was a little weird too, that he like came out and said that while he was still in the tournament. You know,
right.
Like it's one of those things where like, if you feel it, you know, and he loses to Khachanov, then you go in and say it, then you can go in and say, you know what, mate, like I'm looking forward to going home. I've been on the road. Cause he, you know, dealing with the Australian, the quarantining and how far it is, he's been on the road much right. more than everyone else. We talked about that with Barty when she quit, right. You know, a lot of the travel, how hard it gets and that kind of stuff. But like, why say it? Like, why give your opponents the knowledge that like this guy already wants to go? He might have one foot out the door a little bit.
100%.
Yeah.
100% right.
I thought like, cause even if he thinks that, like, don't tell it, you know, like you don't have to be honest all the time. You don't have to tell us everything. So I thought that was a little weird, but back to Alcaraz. I mean, we'll see what happens with him. I mean, even making the quarters, I was almost a little impressed that, you know, he kind of followed up Wimbledon with a decent result. He won Washington, the doubles and the singles, and he didn't do great on the Masters 1000s. But then he came back and made a quarter, played five. You know, it was a tough match. So I still kind of think we're giving him the benefit of the doubt until we see some sort of, you know, difference. If he starts to slide or if he gets, you know, kind of keeps it going, then it's good, you know?
Yeah. Yep. Well, you know, like we say every time, Brett, or, you know, he's the future of the game now.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, with Federer retiring and, you know, it's no secret. Rafa's what, 36, 37.
Mm-hmm.
What's Joker?
I think the same.
34, 30, about the same, 35, 36, something like that. So, you know, the guys that are the future of the game need to be the future of the game now.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and
they have no other choice.
Right. There's no other choice now is right. But so
a couple things to wrap up on Alcaraz. That I wanted to say one thing. I got to give a shout out to my coworker at Tennis Channel, Lindsay Davenport, American Grand Slam champion and a really cool person, said earlier in the year when Alcaraz was on his run to us at work that there was a 1,000% chance Alcaraz wins a Grand Slam this year. And that was before the French. So he loses in the French in like whatever the quarters, loses to Sinner at Wimbledon. And now all of a sudden, like, shit, 1,000% and only one more swing at the ball, you know?
Right.
And boom, he comes through and wins it. And, you know, justifying Lindsay's call. And like, I have to give her a little shout out because I think it's cool.
He deserves it. That's a good pick. You know, the only thing is, I wish you'd have told us that we'd have put a fiver on her.
Yeah, we put a little bet on that.
On Alcaraz. We'd have put a final $5 on him.
Yep.
That would have been good. Yep. That would have been a good call.
But shout out, Lindsay. One more thing just about Alcaraz that makes me think he could be the guy that kind of like takes over from the Fed, the Nadal, like takes the baton, is that when he plays his matches, he plays exciting matches, dude. You know? Like he plays fun, exciting matches and he seems to bring out the best in his like opponents, you know, like Tiafoe in that five setter played well, And then Sinner played well, and Cilic played really well, you know? So he plays this like entertaining style. It's super dramatic. You know, he hits these crazy trick shots and shots like you've never seen before. And then he brings out the best in his opponents. And I think that's like one of those things where not many guys do that, you know, like, you know, like Fed did it, you know, and like, you know, Nadal did, like some of these guys, they do it. You do it like, cause everyone wants to get up to play you, you know,
maybe he's the guy now with the bullseye on his back.
Right.
You know, maybe he's the new guy, you know, and there he comes, your word discipline again. Let's see if he has the discipline to handle it.
Right.
And how he handles it.
I think he does.
You know, yeah. I mean, boy, you know, for somebody that young, you know, to come in and not be afraid. I mean, that's pretty good going up against the three guys that he's going to eventually replace, Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic. I mean, I'm not getting, you know, don't get me wrong. I'm not, you know, retiring them all. I'm just saying.
No, but just eventually. I mean, he's only 19. So let's say those guys play for three more years. He's 22, you know?
Right. It's amazing, you know? And here's another thing, Brett. I'll talk to you about it honestly, is, you know, you have a great year and he's had a great year. Yeah, you know, and by winning the U.S. Open and stuff, you know, you got to watch that sophomore hangover.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm not saying everybody does it, but you're talking to one guy who did, which was fine, because then all of a sudden I said, I got to the finals of Australia, Wimbledon, and the U.S. Open, but I just got to the finals.
Yeah.
You know, if I would have, you know, who knows if I'd have kept my mind on my business. You know, I lost a bit of discipline. That's why that word is tattooed on my forehead. If I wouldn't have lost that discipline, what would have happened? You know, maybe nothing, but you know, we'll never know now.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's all good. That's all good. What advice would you give him going into it? Just stay focused.
I would say that now, you know, all the pressure is off him. You know, winning the toughest thing to do is to win your first Grand Slam. He's done that. You know, now it's just a matter of keeping up and you know, taking care of your business and understanding, you know, what your role is now. You know, being there's a difference when you walk into a place and they say, well, he's a Grand Slam champion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people look at you differently, you know, through a different set of eyes. Oh, which one did he win? You know, who'd he beat? You know, how'd it go? Did he have any tough matches? All of a sudden, it's a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as opposed to walking in and say, well, you know, you got to the fourth round.
Right.
You know, he's going to say, well, I'll be darned. Now, how about that? Well, you know, that was only the first week. What did you do the second week? Well, he was home.
Right.
He wanted to go home. You know, so I got a feeling, you know, and you said it right. He plays exciting matches and exciting tennis. And, you know, that's, you know, when he plays like that, that, you know, that you said it earlier, 10 minutes ago, that drags the other players along with him,
mm-hmm.
you know, to say, if I'm going to keep up, holy Christ, this guy's playing, you know, at 90%, what am I going to do to keep up with him?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and hopefully, you know, he comes in and, you know, knowing that Rafa and Djokovic are still out there, you know, that they push him a little further to try to be better, and that he, Alcaraz, starts pulling some guys along with him too, you know, to get better and to start winning Grand Slams and, you know, pushing him and so forth. It's going to be a fun next couple of years. Number one, to see, you know, Rafa and Novak and
how it shakes out, like who takes the roles and who takes the new positions and, you know?
Yep.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Fall is finally here, which means back to routine, back to busy schedules, and back to the best time-saving hack for weeknight dinners, EveryPlate. If you think meal kits are too expensive, think again. Every plate is 25% cheaper than grocery shopping. Every plate's quality ingredients come pre-portioned to help you save money and reduce food waste. You know, like that big bag of spinach you throw out every week. Get exactly what you want. Now you can swap proteins and sides or add a protein to a veggie dish and crush every craving. When your weekdays and nights get jam-packed, every plate will help you get delicious meals on the table without breaking the bank. My favorite stuff from every plate is anything with a spice. My girlfriend and I get in the kitchen, we cook it up quick, and we're eating dinner in no time. That's why I love every plate. Get your first box for just $1.49 per meal by going to everyplate.com and entering code CONNORS149. That's $1.49 per meal at everyplate.com with code CONNORS149. We all want to turn back the clock. For some, it's for vanity. Others, just to relive those glory days. For me, I would love to wake up every morning with zero brain fog, a clear mind, and be as energized as I was when I was younger. I know I can start to lose focus the longer the day goes on, but thanks to First Person, I can take a more active role in my brain's overall health. After witnessing the deteriorating effects Alzheimer's had on their father and grandfather's cognitive health, brothers Chris and Joe were determined to take their brain health into their own hands. So they created First Person, an innovative, precision-targeted cognitive supplement system, which uses the brain-boosting medical benefits of mushrooms to activate the full potential of human cognitive and brain health. Made with functional mushrooms aimed to stimulate the body's natural production of specific neurotransmitters that trigger activities like energy, mood, and sleep. I've always had a tough time going to sleep ever since I was a young kid. My brain would always race and race and race on the most meaningless things and make it hard for me to sleep. So I take the Moonlight supplement, which helps me get in bed and to sleep in a decent amount of time so I can be ready to go for the next day. Start improving your brain health and cognition with First Person. Get 15% off your first order by going to getfirstperson.com and use code CONNORS. That's GETFIRSTPERSON.com. Code CONNORS for 15% off your first order. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Let's move on to some pigskin football. 1 week is in the book, and I don't know how many times I'm going to get to do this, so I'm going to celebrate a little. The Dolphins are 1-0 with a 20-7 decisive home victory over the dreaded New England Patriots.
Decisive.
I mean, we should have put up more than 20. Really, we only scored one offensive touchdown, but we scored a defensive touchdown on a sack strip. But I mean, I don't know. It looks okay. We need to get better on offense, but our defense is pretty strong.
Yeah.
And you know, I like the new coach. He seems like he's got a good attitude. He's a young guy. We'll see how it goes. We got a tough schedule though, the next three games. I think we got Baltimore, Buffalo, which looked really good, blowing out the Rams. Yeah. And then I think we got the Bengals, who lost to the Steelers on a last second field goal. But talk to me, anything that stuck out to you? Russell Wilson losing on the new team back in Seattle. Anything else? What do you think?
You know, the Cowboys, I guess, you know, their quarterback has had surgery already. So where's that put them?
Yeah.
You know, you know, I guess he's going to be out, what, six, 8 weeks. And, and where's that put the Cowboys now? Is I guess a lot of people are talking, you know, I mean, you know, you got to look at the Cowboys. That's America's team.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, America's talking about them. So is that is their season over already? You know, how do you look at that?
Do you think they make a phone call to the 49ers who have Garoppolo sitting on the bench?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's sitting there. They could give up, you know, they'd have to give up something for him. But they got, I mean, the other quarterback, Trey Lance, I think his name is. My bad. I'm kind of, the young kid that they drafted 2 years ago, started the season, didn't look great, losing in the first game to the Bears. Five out of the six. We said this, I think, last week, that there were 10 home dogs or something like that.
Right.
10 home dogs week one. And then how does it turn out? Five of the six top favored teams lost straight up.
Right.
Straight up.
Well, yeah.
Talk about Vegas making some money.
Well, the one guy that didn't disappoint again was, you know, was you know, our guy down at Tampa. I mean, you know, what the hell? I mean, does he's going to be playing when he's 55.
Right.
You know, Tom Brady, I mean, and Tampa, he's retired. He's come back. I'm getting a little tired of that, you know, but the more he plays, the more, you know, his legacy is being built. And Tampa has really, built a team around him to protect him,
mm-hmm.
which is, for me, going out there, somebody's going to go one time. They're just going to say, he's won a few too many times. Boom. You know,
I feel like we've been saying that for about 12 years now.
Yeah. But isn't that, you're exactly right. But, man, he just keeps coming back and playing at such a high level and winning games.
Yep.
I mean, I'm going to compare him to Kyrgios. I'm sure Tom Brady's not going in these games saying, I'd rather be home. I'm not going to try to get to the Super Bowl. I guarantee you, he's not saying that.
Right.
He's in there saying, I want to win every damn game that I play in. I want to get to the Super Bowl. These guys are going to be in shape. I'm going to be in shape. You know, once again, there's the guy that's pulling his team along with him. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm going to perform. I'm 45. I'm going to do this. Come on, guys. You 22, 23, 24 year olds. Come on, jump on this. You know, we got one or two opportunities. I want another Super Bowl. I want to win you one too. Help me win this.
Right.
There's your guy.
That's difference in mindset too, where like he'll do anything for like one more chance at another ring or, you know, another title, essentially, let's say, you know, yeah. And then like the other way where you're like, you know, I want to go home. I'm done. I've missed my home or all this stuff where like, you know, fuck home. It'll be there. Home ain't going anywhere. Home's not going anywhere, yeah. But like the chance for this week for you to win this title is, you know.
Yeah.
So you're right. Adding Julio Jones does not hurt. They just keep giving him more weapons down there. He's got Evans. He's got Godwin, and now he's got Julio.
Jeez.
Spoiled, bro. I'm jealous.
I like that because when your favorite guy Dan Marino played, once he put the ball in the air, I mean, he just drew you to the television. I mean, it's like, pass it again, throw it again. I mean, it was so exciting to watch. And if they're bringing in more receivers like that for him, it's going to be airborne. You know that. So that's going to be exciting to watch. But there's a lot of good teams.
Yeah.
There's some good teams. But you know what's interesting, though, Brett, is that, you know, I was reading the other day that about the salary of a lot of the coaches, and the college coaches.
Yeah.
And it's like you said, deservedly so, you know, who's going to go out and get these players, you know, and bring them in and to be a part of the system and everything, you know, it's the coach, right?
Yeah.
The coach, the GM, the back office, but I'm sure the coach is the one that, has to put up with, you know, dealing with in football with, you know, how many, you know, 60 players and, you know, or basketball or whatever. And it's kind of different than tennis. I mean, your coach is dealing with one guy, you know, or a couple of guys, but, mm-hmm. you know, dealing with all that and keeping the team, you know, together and all for the same reason and, you know, kind of, you know, making everybody better to, you know, to, for their main, one main goal, which is to win, you know, games every weekend, you know, these, when I read it, I said, I got to read that because I hope it's not derogatory because, you know, I'm sure that, you know, they're every day they're eating, breathing, living, you know, trying to make that team better, whether it's pro or college. So it was just kind of interesting to see and fun to read. And it was a good read. I'm glad that, they're working it that way.
Yeah. Well, like, if you realize that they don't pay the players all these years, I know that's starting to change, but I mean, some of these football and basketball programs, I mean, how many millions and millions of dollars do they make for the schools, you know, and the athletic departments and all that stuff. So like, I mean, someone's got to get paid, you know, like, so somebody is in charge of bringing that success and all that money kind of to the university. So if they're not going to pay the players, which I think they should in some sort of way, you know, whether it's, you know, across the board, a certain amount of money for every athlete on the school, whatever it is, there should be something, you know, you can't generate that kind of money and just not give it to them. But if you're not going to, I mean, the coach should probably get something pretty good, especially if you're like Alabama with Saban, or, you know, like, I don't know, just, you know, Kansas basketball or Duke. You know, I know Krzyzewski just retired, but I mean, you know, imagine the money they bring in, and then they go and they sign a, you know, a 10-year deal with Nike to outfit the school with their clothes and the shoes. And that brings in all this money and extra exposure and commercials and all that stuff. So, I mean, they kind of deserve it, because, like, you know, who else should get it?
Right. I tell the story all the time when you were looking at colleges, when we went to University of Texas,
mm-hmm.
and you went in, to be a part of the golf team, and, you know, they're showing us around campus, and they said, here's where you'll come to work out every day. And if you need this, come to this area, here's the trainers, and you walk in, and it was all built by the football.
Right.
Remember that?
Yep.
I mean, you know, being in there and seeing just, you know, how high tech and everything it was. And this was, you know, 25 years ago, 30 mm-hmm. years ago, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and oh my God, you know, so the program, you're right. You know, to get those programs going, it takes a lot. So, hey, you might as well pay somebody. And you know, now it's a good thing. I think a lot of that's changed with the way they treat the players now, that they can, you know, maybe go and try to make some money off of their name and so forth over the course of their college careers, which is good too. So, good sports, good stuff in sports.
Yeah. They got, they bring in so much money that, I mean, I think it's good. The players need to get something. They're able to start signing endorsement deals now once they sign with a college too, which is, you know, a way to make money outside of having to have the school pay him. One last story. You mentioned earlier about Brady retiring and coming back. There's another famous quarterback in the news who is famous for retiring and coming back multiple times, Mr. Brett Favre. Have you heard about this story?
You know what? I was watching the news today, and I walked in the room when it was just over, and I saw that, you know, that he is, there is an investigation or something that's going on with him. And I didn't have time to get to it and see it. What are you hearing?
So the story is, he's went to Southern Mississippi. He's, you know, must live there. I'm not sure. But so he's been, former Governor Phil Bryant helped Brett Favre secure welfare funding for University of Southern Mississippi's volleyball stadium, texts reveal. So there's text between Favre and the governor back and forth. Yeah. So essentially they stole or reallocated, quote unquote, $5 million from welfare funding, which is, you know, for the most needy, you know, poor people in the world who need probably the most help. Took that money and decided to build a volleyball stadium at University of Southern Mississippi, where it happened that I think his daughter was playing volleyball. So helped build a new volleyball stadium. What do you think?
I don't know what to think.
That's a crazy story, right?
Yeah, it's a crazy story. And you know, I like to, you know, spend a little time and research that and hear a little bit more, but it's going to be interesting to see where that goes, you know, and see what comes out of that. But, yeah, that's. I'm gonna have to do a little research on that, and give me a minute, and we'll talk about that on our next podcast. But you know, I hope to hear more about that.
Yeah, I'm sure more will come out in the coming days. Kind of crazy to think, like, Favre at one time was this beloved quarterback, you know, and then he did the retire, come back. So he kind of alienated like multiple teams that he played for. You know, like left Green Bay, played for Minnesota, their rival, then went to the Jets, and had all those, like, you know, sexting, you know, pics with the media girl that worked for the Jets. He's just kind of done some weird stuff. And then now this comes out and it's just like, I don't know what's going on, bro.
I guess sometimes it's better just to lay low.
Right.
You know, and just, you know, kind of take care.
Here's my question. Like, if you need $5 million and you're Brett Favre, don't you like have some sort of like auction or some event or something, and you go around to all like your former players and athletes and famous people you've met over your whole career and say, hey, look, I'm trying to raise money for my daughter's volleyball. We're going to build this volleyball. Let's have this auction. Can you guys donate, sign this or sign that? Like, wouldn't you do something like that before you risk like something like this ever coming out?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there could be so many things that that are underlying that we don't know about, right and wrong. But I'm going to reserve my comment until our next podcast because I got to do a little research on that, and hopefully, I can get a little more information. But it's going to be interesting to see where that goes. I mean, when that makes headlines and makes the news, people are interested in it. So it'd be interesting to see where that heads.
Right. And like, if these sort of things, like if this comes out, obviously other things like this have been done or are done. Like imagine all the crazy things that like just don't get exposed that we don't know about.
Man. But,
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, whatever. We'll come back to it. We'll come back to it in a week or two.
Like I said, though, bud, sometimes it's better just to lay low.
Right.
Yeah. Not
stay
a bad
out of
thing.
Trouble. Stay out of trouble.
Yeah. Well, so I want to say one thing. We, the world lost the queen. She was on the throne, the Queen of England, Queen Elizabeth, passed away within the last week or so. And there's a lot going on the news with it. And Charles now is taken over as king. But it's interesting. Better, we see that the passing of a queen. Now it's passed down to a king. I wonder, how long it's going to be before another queen comes around and rules, because you go from Charles, who does he pass it on to?
I think
William.
Who does William pass it on to? I don't know. Does his wife become queen? I don't know how all that stuff works. I'm really bad with all that. But yeah, you're right. I'm not sure. I mean, I think she ruled for something like 72 or 3 years. So like there's a good portion of the world who doesn't know a world without her as like the Queen of England,
Right. Yeah. And you know what, she was elegant and the way she handled, so many things and the way she dressed and for her to have been in that position for such a long time, the Great Britain, England, they've lost a great leader, role model, like I said, I don't know much about that and the order of which things happen, but it was it was very interesting to over the years to watch her and feel what she had to give and what she had given her people there, her fans, her country, her Great Britain and England, her world. In that respect. And the world's lost a great leader and she'll be missed, I'm sure.
Right. And it's probably interesting to see the reception or the reaction to it from different parts of the world, like let's say a country like India or Africa or like China, where like the, the colonialism and the British, rule was for a long time and a lot of years and stuff like that. Like, but you're right. It's a sad day. I've been covering Davis Cup, like I said earlier this all week. And Great Britain played yesterday and all week in Glasgow. They're having the event with the Davis Cup. USA is there. And they've been doing a ceremony every day honoring her. It's a really nice thing. They put a nice picture of her up on the screen. And so, yeah, it's sad. And it's just a lot of stuff going on. It seems like lately the world is moving pretty fast and a lot going on from day to day. So What do you got going on the rest of the day? You golfing? Well, you biking? You hanging with mom? You with the dog? What are you doing?
I've got my exercise in. I went on my bike ride and I've been working a little bit trying to offset this market. The other day was kind of a setback a little bit, but getting into that a little bit and trying to figure out some good moves and hopefully not any bad moves. I was going to go play some golf, but. I think I want to pass today. I've been playing a little bit too much and I'm feeling it. So I think I'm going to pass and just kind of lay around the house and take Bogey for a walk and get mom to go with me. And, kind of, like I said, sometimes it's better just to lay low.
Right.
And I think that today's my day to lay low. So it's going to be good.
That doesn't sound bad. One quick thing. I mentioned we haven't been talking NFTs and the crypto stuff lately just because the market's been down so much. But last night was the Ethereum, the ETH, that we talk about with NFTs being the currency. It was the Ethereum merge. is what they call it. I know a lot of people out there don't know what I'm talking about, and I don't exactly know all the facts, but essentially what it is it makes it better for the environment, and it makes it, you know, better for you know, doing contracts and a lot of things like that on the blockchain. So the word is that, you know, it's going to be a good thing going forward. And, you know, that along with Bitcoin are kind of maybe the two strongest cryptos, even though both of them have been taking a hit. I mean, along with everything else, Jesus.
Yeah. It's been, we've been through a bit of a tough time, and, you know, hopefully, you know, the things start turning around a little bit, and I don't know if we've hit the bottom yet, but hopefully when we do hit bottom, it gives a good bounce back. So just got to, you know, kind of bide our time a little bit and try not to get too hurt. In the meantime,
and don't look at it too much. If you watch it too much, it's just not good. Just kind of look at it once a week or something like that, and then go back to not looking at it.
Yeah, I think that's the right idea. In the meantime, you can follow us at Jimmy Connors on Twitter.
That's right.
At Advantage Connors, at ADV Connors, at Brett_Connors.
I love it. At Gold Dude Isabella on Instagram, if you want to follow the mascot who was barking in the background earlier. I'm going to go take her on a little walk. It's starting to cool off here, so I'm going to take her on a little walk and get out of the house and get some fresh air.
Do it. Get to it. Neil, you get some rest. You got another couple days of work. I know you got some long hours, but get some rest. And don't forget to send in some questions on Facebook or Instagram or whatever. I like answering your questions. And stay with us, and we'll see you again next week.
Yeah, we'll get back into some questions and answers next week. We just kind of ran a little long today, so we'll get back to it next week. So thanks for everybody for listening, and we will check you next week. We are out. Peace.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.